What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. I mentioned the other day that I had read through a couple of opinions that had come down from the Court of Appeals, North Carolina State Court of Appeals. And we did one of them the other day, but the other ruling that I read was Guilford County, it was Emily Happel, and on behalf of Tanner Smith versus Guilford County Board of Ed and Old North State Medical Society, Inc. Okay? So you got Emily Happel and her, I believe, her son, Tanner Smith. And she's remarried, and the stepdad is kind of tangentially involved here. But she's the mom, okay? Emily has a son named Tanner Smith, okay? And they appeal a trial court's dismissal of their lawsuit that they had brought against the Guilford County Board of Education and the Old North State Medical Society. At issue, statutory immunity under the Federal PREP Act, which is the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. Okay? PREP Act. Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. All right. So here is, according to the Court of Appeals ruling, here's what happened. This is on August 14th, 2021. All right. So COVID days, summertime, school's getting ready to start back up. Tanner is a 14-year-old and a football player at Western Guilford High School. Okay. This is inside Guilford County Schools. He gets a letter dated August 19th that informs him and his parents, Emily, his mom, and Brett Happel, his stepfather, that Tanner may have been affected by a recent COVID-19 cluster. Remember these days? Right? I'm old enough to remember these days when, like, oh my gosh, somebody near you got, you know, tested positive for COVID. And so now every single person that you like walk past, that you looked at, like everybody now has to be alerted. And then they all start freaking out. And then they have to tell everybody that they know and all that. And by the way, all of that contact tracing, that was all crap. Okay. That contact tracing, and I was saying this at the time, the contact tracing matters if a pandemic has just begun, right? And you're trying to find patient zero very quickly because they're maybe walking around still infecting other people, whatever. So you want to try to, like, if you could round everybody up and quarantine everybody at the very earliest stage of an outbreak, the contact tracing matters. But by the time we were doing it, I mean, you had millions and millions of people all over the planet that had had interactions. Like, how are you tracing this? And it turned out, you know, of course, it didn't have much value. And the health services abandoned the practice. So, because it became endemic, right? It's now endemic, like the common cold. Okay. So, the stepfather, Brett, he takes Tanner to get a test because in order to play football at his school, he was required to get COVID testing. And so the Guilford County Public Health Department recommended and requested COVID-19 testing for individuals potentially infected regardless of their vaccination status. The letter stated that unless parents allowed their children to be tested, not even vaccinated, but just tested for this particular cluster outbreak, Guilford County Schools would not allow the players to return to practice until they were cleared by a public health professional. Right? So they had to go in and get a test. Okay. The letter also states COVID-19 testing would be available on August 20th, 2021, at no cost to the high school. All right? Okay, so got to get tested. If you want to play the sports, you got to go get the test, not the shot, but you got to go get the test. And you were exposed, so go to the school and get the test, and it's free. The letter indicated that the Old North State Medical Society would be conducting the testing, and you as the parent would have to consent for your kid to get the test. Right? So far, all of this makes sense, right? All of this makes sense. All right, you get the Q-tip up the nose, and then you can go out and start, you know, cracking heads. Okay. So on August 20th, 2021, stepdad Brett drives Tanner to the testing site at the school. Stepdad remains inside his vehicle while Tanner goes in. I don't know why. There is no explanation for this. I'm not sure. Well, considering how things played out, I think that was the wrong choice. I think Brett probably should have gone in with Tanner. Now, maybe Tanner was like, I don't want you to be with me. No one else is going. Maybe he is there with his friends and they all go in together, you know. They didn't want dad to be near him. Whatever. He's a 14-year-old, right? This is how they behave, I've heard. So Brett stays out in the car. Tanner goes in. And by the way, this testing facility is also a vaccination site. Now, you see where this is going? Can you see where this is heading? Inside, clinic workers give Tanner a form to fill out. And he believed it to be something related to the COVID-19 test because it said you had to give consent. Tanner was seated in the facility while a clinic worker tried unsuccessfully to call his mom, Emily, to obtain consent to administer a vaccine, a COVID-19 shot. The workers did not attempt to contact Brett, who was out in the truck. Now, again, I got a question. Tanner, why wouldn't you tell the workers Brett's out in the truck, right? Like, why wouldn't you say, if you're trying to get consent, why don't you just go out and talk to Brett, or I'll go get him and bring him in, or whatever. So after the clinic workers failed to make contact with Tanner's mom, one of the workers tells the other worker, give it to him anyway. Tanner said he did not want a vaccine, and he was only there expecting a test. But one of the workers administered a Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine to him anyway. Those are the facts of the case. The plaintiff, so the parents now, they sue. And they allege battery, violations of the mom's constitutional liberty and parental rights, and of Tanner's bodily autonomy rights under the state constitution. And they allege violations of both plaintiff's federal constitutional rights, which, by the way, they would pretty soon after they would abandon the federal constitutional claims on appeal. So they're just left with the battery claim and the violation of constitutional and parental rights under the state constitution. Okay. The defendants here, they said, we have immunity because they got the shot. Oh, I'm kidding. That doesn't give you immunity. No, they're claiming that they have immunity under the PrEP Act, the Federal PrEP Act. So that's what this case is about. Okay. Son doesn't want the shot. Mom and dad don't want him to get the shot. He goes in to get a test. They give it to him anyway. They sue. And the people that administered the shot say, you can't sue us. We have immunity under this federal law. All right. So I've given you the details on this this case. It's out of Greensboro, basically, Guilford County. And you got Tanner Smith, wants to play football, 14 years old. He gets a notice from the health department. Hey, you were hanging out with some of these kids and they got COVID. One of them's got COVID, so you got to go test it or else you can't go on the field for practice. So, you know, dad takes him to the site so he can get tested. He goes in there and the workers are like, oh, let's give this kid a vaccine shot. And he's like, no, I don't want one. And they're like, try to call his mom. They can't get his mom, but his dad's right outside. Never ask him, or that's never communicated, whatever. So they give him the jab anyway that he did not want. So now mom and dad are suing for constitutional violations and battery. Okay. The Board of Ed and the medical provider, they're saying they have immunity under the Federal PrEP Act. And the Court of Appeals in North Carolina agreed. Due to the sweeping breadth of the federal liability immunity provision in the PrEP Act, we are constrained to disagree with the plaintiffs. This thing was enacted in 2005, the PrEP Act. It provides that when the Secretary of Health and Human Services makes a determination that a disease or other health condition or other threat to health constitutes a public health emergency, or that there is a credible risk that the disease, the condition, or the threat may in the future constitute such an emergency, then the secretary may make a declaration recommending the, quote, manufacture, testing, development, distribution, administration, or use of one or more covered countermeasures. And what does all of that mean? It means that if the secretary declares an emergency, then they can stick you with the shot because it's a covered countermeasure, right? And they have immunity. Subject to the other provisions of this section, a covered person shall be immune from suit and liability under federal and state law with respect to all claims for loss caused by, arising out of, relating to, or resulting from the administration to, or the use by an individual of covered countermeasure, blah, 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 blah. They are immune under this law from 2005. Skipping ahead. This is, by the way, this is Happel v. Guilford County Board of Ed. That's the ruling here, if you are interested in looking it up. Wisely or not, the court says, the plain language of the PrEP Act includes claims of battery and violations of state constitutional rights within the scope of its immunity, and it therefore shields the defendants from liability for these claims. There does not appear to be a Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals nor a North Carolina Federal District case that connects to this or would apply here. So they have to look at some out-of-state cases. The first one, Parker v. St. Lawrence County Public Health Department, they held a vaccination clinic due to the outbreak of the H1N1 flu. And a nurse employed by the health department gave a vaccination to a child without getting parental consent. And the court said that's okay. Congress intended to preempt all state law tort claims arising from the administration of covered countermeasures. Second case, Cowan v. Walgreen. The plaintiff alleged that she visited a Walgreen store, asked for a flu vaccine. Oops, got the COVID one instead. The court in Cowan noted the PrEP Act, Congress plainly provides immunity under both federal and state law with respect to all claims. And finally, MT versus Walmart. The plaintiff mother sued Walmart after one of its pharmacists administered a COVID-19 vaccine to her minor child without her consent, and the court noted the immunity listed under the PrEP Act is broad and applies to any claim for loss that has a causal relationship with the administration to or use by an individual of a covered countermeasure. And the covered countermeasure is the shot, is a vaccination shot. It is, the text is unambiguous, according to the courts. And if you don't like the language in the PREP Act, then Congress needs to change the language in the PREP Act. Because otherwise, anytime they declare a state of emergency, they can go run around and jab your kid. Apparently, I'm getting a lot of traction off of the soundbite of Kamala Harris, who apparently was not aware that the NCAA women's basketball brackets existed before, like, 2 years ago. Wait, what? You didn't think the brackets existed? I mean, I could play you the audio clip. It's from News 14. From Spectrum News. Tim Boyum in Raleigh, he got a got the opportunity to ask Kamala Harris a couple of questions while she was in Charlotte. And this clip has now gone kind of viral, I guess.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that when...
Hang on a second. Where's the Venn diagram here? I feel robbed. There's no Venn diagram here. I will paint the picture for you. Tim Boyum has his back to us. He's got the microphone pointed towards her. She's standing in front of an American flag, and then there's like a white flag behind her. I guess is that the presidential flag? Maybe. I don't know.
Do you know? Okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that? The women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022. Think about that and what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress and what that has done. Because, of course, when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But, you know, how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered, you know, and this is the reality. People used to say, oh, women's sports, who's interested? Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh, do you know?
By the way, her facial expressions during this history lesson that she's providing to Tim Boyum, who just sits there nodding, which, like all I could tell, maybe you're just, I don't know. Like, I just know how I would react. If I'm sitting there and somebody is whizzing on my boot and telling me that it's raining, I would be like, no. Really? I mean, I would do it like that. I wouldn't do it like, oh my gosh, you're an idiot and a liar. Like, I wouldn't say it like that. I'd say, oh, how about the brackets or whatever? And, oh, hey, do you know a little bit of a history lesson that the women were not even allowed to have a bracket? I would have said, like, no, that's not right. That would 2022, are you sure about that? They can't have bracket. Like, was there a bracket ban? Are you telling me, like, was there a law against women having brackets? Because that seems weird. Because I'm pretty sure they've had them like a really long time, like ever since they kind of created the whole tournament structure. No, because that's what a tournament structure is. Are you talking about televising? I know that's not true, because I've been aware that the women's basketball tournaments have been broadcast on TV for years. I mean, I don't watch them, but But look, I think, you know, part of it is, you know who is, I think, really responsible and who should get all the credit, really, for the new attention to women's basketball? Steph Curry. Yeah. I mean, without him, kind of redefining the way that the game is played with the three-point shooting and all of that, you know, now all of a sudden, like, because for a long time, it was all about the dunks, right? That's when I grew up. I grew up at a time when it was, you know, get the ball to the big man down low and he'll dunk. And then along comes Michael Jordan. And now he's dunking, jumping off from like the three-point line and stuff, just like flying around the court, dunking here, dunking there. Not even to mention Tim Duncan. But you got all the dunking going on. That's what everybody wanted to see. Three-pointers were not, like, they were... You had like one guy on the team who could hit three-pointers, right? And then, so now it's like, now you got like 7-footers that hit 3-pointers. So really it is, that's his name, right? Steph Curry. I think he really deserves all the credit for the women's basketball. I'm just kidding. But that is no less stupid of an argument than what the vice president made.
Okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022?
I don't believe you. I don't believe you. It's just not true. The NCAA, oh, here we go. Oh, good. She's getting community noted. The NCAA women's basketball tournament began using structured tournament brackets in 1982. Missed it by this much. 40 years. She was just 40 years off. It could happen to anyone, you know? 2022, 1982, whatevs. And there you go. Tournament brackets, 1982, with the inception of the women's NCAA basketball tournament. And look, watching the women's game now is a lot of fun because now it's the game is like, it's all about the 3-point shot now. It seems to me. Like, I haven't really followed basketball since I worked for the Hornets. Kind of had a falling out with NBA basketball, and then it kind of just trickled over into basketball in general. But I digress. The point here is that the game has shifted, and I think that's a good thing for women's basketball because people now want to see a lot more of the 3-point shots, and there's nothing that stops the ladies from taking the 3-point shots, right? Dunking? Yeah, it's a little bit, I know. Far be it for me to suggest that men and women might be different in their ability to dunk the ball. But I did. Okay. I did. I don't know why I'm even... Well, how am I even on this topic? I don't even know. Okay. I can't read that, Dennis. John says the white flag behind Kamala Harris is the vice presidential flag. Why does the vice president need a flag? What are we doing here? Why? Why does the Veep need a flag? Although it doesn't make sense that she would have a white flag. Sorry. It's not. That's not her specifically that has the white flag, but it is a white flag. Why would you want your vice president to be rolling up waving a white flag, right? Like, come on. Because, like, what happens? You're in war, the president falls, and they're like, don't worry, the vice president is here. And she comes rolling up with the white flag and people think, oh, she's surrendering. Like, that's, to me, bad idea. Anyway, yeah, so now this clip is making the is making the rounds. Oh, here you go. They're going to take y'all back out of brackets. This is the argument now from Joe Biden. Not the back in chains. This is they're going to take away your brackets. If you elect Republicans, they're going to make sure that you women can't be in your own NCAA brackets. Air fryer hoax. It's coming, Pam. It's coming. Next hour. Regarding the Court of Appeals ruling on the COVID shots, Judson Berger, writing at the at National Review, he was taught the other day, and this was a couple weeks ago. He said that it's nothing short of rewriting history. Yeah, nothing short of rewriting history to suggest that school closures were just another pandemic-era conundrum that policymakers had to navigate with imperfect information. Okay? But that is how it's being framed now, right? There is a rewriting of the COVID history that is occurring right now. Retconning, if you will. As more and more data emerge demonstrating just how damaging the push for seemingly interminable remote learning was to vulnerable students, right? This is now how it's being framed today. See, this was just a case of well-meaning officials, you know, doing the best they could in difficult times, And it's this narrative that sounds kind of reasonable until, you know, you go back a couple of pages in the history book. And if you do that, you realize that isn't actually what was occurring. See, I remember this, and you probably do too, because we're old enough to remember it. What was the official line and narrative about the closing of all the schools? Were there any voices saying, hey, we shouldn't do this? I know there were. I was one of them. And I'm not a fan of the K-12 government model.
Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
All right, so Judson Berger writing at the National Review under the headline, "Don't Tolerate the Rewriting of COVID History." And right now, there are people that are advancing this narrative that, well, you know, we did the best we could. We had this information. It was all that we had, right? Well-meaning government officials just doing the best they could in difficult times. But if you were paying attention and you were raising questions and you suffered the backlash that I can tell you I did, many people did. I could name them. I mean, like the entire, all of the signers of the Great Barrington Declaration, for example. And it was most acute and obvious on this decision to close schools and keep them closed. Because initially, like for whatever the initial response was, remember the first reaction was, well, first it was don't believe Donald Trump. Go to Chinatown, celebrate the Chinese New Year, you know. Because Donald Trump is an orange man, he's bad. And so if he's, you know, warning against the Wuhan flu, then he's just a racist, right? But then it was 15 days to flatten the curve, right? Which was what? Don't overload the hospitals because everybody was going to be coming in. Everybody was going to be sick. So everybody had to, you know, stay away from the hospitals. Don't go in for your regular routine checkups and stuff or your you know, screenings and that sort of stuff, because we needed to make sure that the hospitals did not become overrun and then turn into basically, you know, like the zombie apocalypse. So, oh, and by the way, there was a cost to that too, right? People who didn't get their preventative screenings ended up getting various ailments, left unchecked, and then died, right? So there was a cost to that, which I was saying at the beginning, you know, it's all of these decisions, as Thomas Sowell points out, right, these are trade-offs. So when you're out there promoting one particular course of action, there is another side of the ledger, as I keep referring to it, right? There's another side of the ledger. What is the cost? Within weeks of the experiment to shut down the schools, parents recognized the catastrophic circumstances that have been imposed on their families. They told anybody willing to listen, from pollsters to politicians, that this new status quo was unsustainable. But those concerns were met with a blizzard of emotionally manipulative brushback pitches in which parents were accused of wanting to sacrifice the lives of America's educators only to restore the convenience that the pandemic had taken from them. Right? This was the narrative, and you saw it during our gubernatorial election. Dan Forrest against Roy Cooper, right? Dan Forrest kept saying masks don't work. And it was the only, and after he said it one or two times, then it was all any of the media would ever ask him about. That was the focus of every single thing that he did, any campaign appearance. And again, this was during COVID, during 2020. So you know, you're limited in how you can campaign and that sort of stuff. And everything became about that. And the media, like WRAL, all of the state, the North Carolina political press, they covered anything related to the gubernatorial election through this one prism, through this one narrative, that Dan Forrest is anti-science and he wants everybody to die because he's young, he's healthy, so screw everybody else, right? He wants teachers to die because Republicans hate teachers. And it wasn't the case. And there's been no acknowledgement of that, right? And this is why we're not going to get anything except this. And I know a lot of Trump supporters don't like it when I say this, but this rematch, the geriatric rematch that we're getting, this ensures that we will not get any kind of an accounting on the COVID response. Because both of these guys, both of them that are running, did stuff wrong. And none of them want to acknowledge that they did stuff wrong. But that is essential that we know that there is an accounting so we know what worked, what didn't. And this way we don't do the stuff that didn't work. We don't do that stuff again.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.